Mutual funds. Mutual funds are where investors pool their money to invest. Portfolio managers manage the pool of the fund. And your return comes as the value of the fund is increased. What in the world did he just say? Let's try this. This is a mutual fund. I'm going to be the mutual fund manager. We're going to open a mutual fund. And you guys are going to invest in it. What's your first name, sir? Randy. Randy's going to put some money in. Your name, ma'am?
Michelle.
Michelle is going to put some money in. Your name, ma'am? Diana's going to put some money in.
David.
David's going to put some money in.
Dan.
Dan is going to put some money in.
Alicia.
Alicia's going to put some money in.
Michelle.
Michelle's going to put some money in.
Ryan.
Ryan is going to put a lot of money in. All right? So what has just happened here? This group of people has just mutually funded this. It is a
mutual fund.
This is hard, isn't it? That's all a mutual fund is. A group of people bought into something together. Usually something they couldn't do by themselves. Because I don't have $1 billion, but I could buy into a mutual fund that had $1 billion and get some of the advantages of playing with people that have $1 billion. And we'll talk about those. Now, what I do with this money as the manager of this mutual fund tells us what kind of mutual fund they bought. If I took this money and I were to buy something like maybe these bonds we talked about, maybe I bought bonds, then this would be a bond mutual fund. And we usually call it a bond fund. Have you ever heard of a bond fund? That's all it is. Instead of you taking $10,000 and buying one bond, if you put $10,000 in this, there'd be a gazillion different bonds in here. And you'd be spread out across a bunch of different bonds. You'd be diversified. You wouldn't have all your eggs where they could get hit with something. You're spread out across more bonds instead of owning just one by being in a bond fund with some other people. Now, if I bought stocks in companies that make things like Dove soap, like Country Crock butter, like Vaseline, like Q-tips, like Slim Fast, like Lipton tea, like Ben and Jerry's ice cream, all detergent, Brute aftershave, Dannon yogurt, Nescafe, Butterfinger, Alpo, Panasonic, or JVC. These are all companies that are not American companies. They're foreign companies. They're overseas companies. Now, a lot of those products are made stateside, in factories right here in the U.S. Some of you may work for one of those companies right here in the U.S. But the company is, and certainly their products are consumed here. Those are household names I just named in America. But whether the product is consumed or made here is not what I'm talking about. The company is not an American company. They're an overseas company, which is not a bad thing. But if you were to buy stock, if I were to take the money out of this mutual fund that these people mutually funded, and I bought stock in companies that make things like that, I'd be buying stock in overseas companies. I'd be buying stock in companies internationally. I'd be buying stock in companies in foreign countries. And see, the name of the mutual fund starts to tell you what's in it. If it's a bond fund, what's in there?
Bonds.
And so if I'm buying stock from companies that are overseas or companies that are international, this would probably be called an international stock mutual fund. Starting to get it? This is how it works. If I take the money out of here and I were to take it out and I were to buy something, I were to buy companies maybe like General Electric, maybe like IBM, maybe like AT&T, maybe like Home Depot, maybe like Cracker Barrel, or maybe, I don't know, let's see, here's another one, Federal Express. Or maybe Walmart, or maybe Microsoft. I could buy either one, right? Or maybe Kmart, or maybe not. And so I could buy stock in companies that some of them, 90 to 200 different companies, America's best and brightest companies, and maybe these stocks, remember it's a share of ownership when I buy stock in it. And instead of buying one company, these guys have bought into this together. They mutually funded it, and they bought a whole bunch of different companies, so they got that diversification. Their eggs are spread out. They're not in one basket. And if I buy stocks and I buy into a mutual fund where there are companies that are growing, we might call their stocks growth stocks, which would make this then a
growth stock mutual fund.
Oh, you're getting it. That's what a growth stock mutual fund is. It's a group of funds, a group of stocks in a mutually funded account. People mutually funded it in companies that are growing. And it goes up, and sometimes it goes down, depending on what the economy is doing and this group of companies do. But if I bet the whole thing on one company, I could lose it all, couldn't I? My eggs could crack up. So if I put $1,000 in one basket for my kids' college, it could crack up. Or if I put $1,000 in here, it's spread across a bunch of different baskets. So it creates diversification. So I like this because remember, diversification lowers risk. Because diversification means to spread around. In other words, what we're saying with money is this. Money is a lot like manure. Left in one big pile, it stinks. Spread around, it grows things. That'll come to you later. Okay, now. All right, so mutual funds go up, they go down. Well, Dave, I'm scared of the stock market. I don't know whether what it's going to do. I don't have any idea what it's going to do. Well, I don't either. I don't have any guarantees. I will tell you this. I've studied it in detail, and Ibbotson, which is one of the research firms, said, I pulled up all their research on it, and 97% of the five-year periods in the stock market's history have made money. It means if you leave it alone 5 years, based on history, 97% chance you're going to make some money. 100% of the 10-year periods have made money. Yeah, Dave, but what about disasters and all that other thing? It's a very interesting question. Very interesting question. This is a study right here I hold in my hand from the Dow Jones firm. They are the people, one of the things they publish you see on the news all the time, the Dow Jones Industrial Average, right? Have you ever heard that as a measure of what the stock market's doing on the news? Here's an interesting thing. What if something happened out there in the world? We would call it a geopolitical event that was a negative thing. Maybe JFK was assassinated. What do you think the stock market did the next day? What did it do? What did it do? Right, that's what it did. What about the Cuban Missile Crisis? When that was all over the front of the newspaper, what do you think happened to the stock market the next week? It didn't actually affect those companies, but it brought fear, didn't it? And fear usually translates to the stock market dropping. What about something like the Oklahoma City bombing? What do you think it did right after that? What do you think about Pearl Harbor getting bombed? Dropped. And those are the things we're afraid of when we start thinking about taking risk. I mean, what about 911? Oh, man. It definitely dropped. I mean, the stock market closed for several days. Wall Street is right adjacent to the World Trade Center. There was dust and rubble everywhere. Plus, the president didn't want the markets back alive right then because people were scared. He was afraid they were going to just go crazy and the market would tank. And so to calm everything down, to get everybody's pulse rate down, the market stayed closed for several days. When it reopened, we in the business all knew that the stock market, as soon as it opened, and you didn't have to be a stock market expert to figure out after the towers come down, right? What's the stock market going to do when it opens up? What's it going to do? And it did, didn't it? Does anybody remember? Well, I mean, in mere minutes, it dropped 500 points. It went crazy. All the newscasters are going, oh, the world's coming to an end. Whoa, 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 yee-haw. People are panicking and pulling their money out. Here's some interesting stuff, though. This study right here that I'm holding in my hands that I was telling you about with those major events studies what happens after a disaster. 1 year later, where is the stock market? When one of those things happens, goes down, where is it a year later? Of those things I named you, not counting 911, that's a different story, but of those other things like the Pearl Harbor, Cuban Missile Crisis, JFK assassination, Oklahoma City bombing, Kuwait invasion, all kinds of other things you could list down through here. There's about 10 or 15 of them on this. Out of every one of them here, within a year, the stock market returned to where it was within 1 year, every single time except Pearl Harbor. And it took it a couple of years to return because Pearl Harbor was off the tail end of the Depression, and we kind of got our tails kicked the first year of that war. It took a little while to get some tanks built and go kick some butt, okay? That's really what happened, wasn't it? If you know a little bit about history. And as soon as that started happening, the market started coming back, and we started winning again. So bottom line is, a year later, it was history. You ever heard of Y2K? You know what the stock market did with Y2K? It went up the first day. I was all ready to go buy some because I thought it was going to go down. I was ready. But it went down the summer before when everybody was freaking out. And January, as soon as the bell rang for the new year, bang, the market went straight up. was one of the best quarters in stock market's history, as a matter of fact, coming out of Y2K, and everybody thinks that's going to be the end of the world. On 9-1-1, here's what's interesting. The day before the cowards attacked New York, on the day before, the Dow Jones Industrial Average closed at 9,605. 9,605 was the Dow Jones Industrial Average on 9-10. Of course, when we reopened, I just told you, it went... And everybody freaks out, and it's all over the news. Did anyone hear one newscast when 59 days later, the Dow came back to its pre-9-1-1 level? It closed on 11-9-01 at 96.08. It was down for 59 days and came back. One of the worst attacks ever on American soil, and the stock market took a 59-day sleep off. Did you hear one newscaster say that? Not one. It doesn't. If it bleeds, it leads. It's not the sky is falling. But see, what I'm trying to tell you here is the American economy is very resilient. It's resilient against war. It's resilient against the attacks by cowards. It's resilient against anything like that, to the point that almost every time within a year it's come back. And in 9-1-1, it came back in 59 days. So it's a pretty safe thing to say, as a group, American companies are a really, really good place to have your dollars invested. Because think about it, if Home Depot closes, if Lowe's closes, if Kmart and Sears close, if Citibank closes, if Ford Motor closes, if General Motors closes, if General Electric closes, if Alcoa closes, and you just name them and name them and name them, McDonald's, Coca-Cola, Hewlett Packard, you know, if all of these companies, if every one of them closed tomorrow, the stock market would be worth zero. Your bank isn't open either. Hello. And the FDIC has collapsed. It doesn't have that kind of strength. You better buy a gun, get you some soup. That's where you're facing at this point. You see what I'm saying? So these are really good places to park money over a long, long period of time. Now, I'm often telling people, listen, if you invest, you can kind of calculate it based on 12%. The stock market, since its inception, has averaged about 11.8%. And I get these calls and I get this hate mail from these goobers all across America and say, you can't get 12% on your money. You just can't get, there's no mutual funds out there get 12%. I mean, I don't know where you have your head stuck, but I tell you what, they're all over the place. There are tons of them. I spent 60 seconds on my Morningstar software just the other day getting ready for this talk. 60 seconds. I found 500 plus mutual funds that have a 15-year track record of 12% or more. I don't think you need 500. You just need a couple of them. So 12% is out there. And some of you people need to really have a life and know something about this stuff and keep your mouth shut if you don't. I'm getting tired of your hate mail because you're clueless. All right? It's out there. 12% is fairly easy to do. I own one mutual fund that has about a 13% average for over 70 years. And in the last 30 years, it's had three times it was down. Now, I don't sell mutual funds. I don't care if you own a mutual fund. It doesn't affect me one thing. But I can tell you this. A lot of our wealth is stored in America's best and brightest companies. Why? Because I think they're going to do well. Why do I think that? Because they've pretty well always done well. As a group. Now, I didn't bet the farm on one of those names. I don't know which one of those names is great. And I'm not going to try to figure all that out. But I'm willing to spread it out and be diversified across several. And I even spread it out then across several kinds of mutual funds. You got to remember now, mutual funds are long-term investments. And when you're picking your Roth IRA or your 401k or doing your long-term investing, you need to spread your mutual funds out across four types of mutual funds. And you look for a mutual fund that has at least a 5 or a 10-year track record. If the mutual fund is not old enough to be potty trained, don't buy it. If it's brand new, there's no need to buy it. There's plenty of old ones out there. Like that one I said, 70 years old. I bought another one the other day, started in 1958. I bought another one the other day, started in 1972. And these all have long track records. It's like buying a home in a neighborhood where the trees are big. You kind of know what's going on. It's been there a while. You know what I'm saying? There's a track record there that I can count on that I'm comfortable with. Now, spread your mutual funds investing across four areas. Put a fourth of your money in growth stock mutual funds. Sometimes those are called mid-cap funds or equity funds, or you might even see it as an index fund like an S&P 500. in your choices at your 401k or that kind of thing. But put a fourth in those. Mid-cap means this. Cap stands for capitalization. Capitalization means money. So this is a medium-sized company. If it's a middle capitalized company, it's in the middle. It's a medium-sized company. That's the process. Then put a fourth of your money in growth and income. That's the calmest one. It's the calmest one. These are also sometimes called a large cap fund. Cap means capitalization. Now, capitalization then means if it's large cap, these are big old dinosaur companies. They don't move real fast. They're not real exciting. They're not going to go up as much when it goes up, but they're not going to go down as much when it goes down. They're kind of boring. And you want this one in here. This is the very precise one. Sometimes these are called blue chip funds because the blue chip on the poker table is the most expensive chip on the poker table. Again, indicating a large company. And so if you hear I've got a blue chip fund, then that's a very calm mutual fund. I put a fourth in aggressive growth. That's the small cap, small companies, exciting, woo-hoo-hoo, emerging markets. This is the one, be our guest, okay? And you don't want to put it all in one of these. Sometimes I hear people say, I'm young, so I'll put all of mine in aggressive growth. That's stupid. If you put all your money in aggressive growth, it's like eating pizza and riding a roller coaster. It'll be fun, but you'll get sick. You don't want to put it all in there because they go way up and they go way down. I had one back in the 90s, made 105% rate of return in 1 year. Lost it all the next year. You don't want to take that ride with all your money. But having a little bit of that flavor in there is good for you when things are happening and doing well. So I have a little bit in there. I have a fourth in there. And then I put a fourth overseas and international, sometimes called an overseas fund, sometimes called an international fund, sometimes called a foreign fund. And you listen for these. Now, it has a kissing cousin called a global fund. I have a global fund that did very well in the last 10 years. Now, a global fund is the whole globe. It's got the whole world in it. It's the whole globe, okay? Which means it's overseas and some U.S., some American companies sprinkled in there. It's everything. And so it's a kissing cousin to the international. An international has no American, but a global has a little bit in there. And they do very, very well sometimes. But that gives you the ability to participate in companies that make products like we named a little bit earlier. So buy with a 5-year or longer track record. Long track record. That's what you're looking for. And spread it across those four kinds of mutual funds. Rental real estate. Real estate's been quite the rage for the last decade. You seem like you could do no wrong. And all of a sudden people are starting to realize they have done wrong. It is the least liquid consumer investment. And I am a big fan of real estate. Dave and Sharon Ramsey have two kinds of investments, paid for real estate and mutual funds. That's it. Don't have anything fancy. That's all we do, paid for real estate and mutual funds. But I will tell you this, real estate will make you broker and broker and broker. That's why they call them brokers. If you buy real estate when you don't have any money, you will crash. It is not a broke person's game. So build up a little bit of wealth, get your baby steps done, get your home paid off, and then start plinking off and buying some properties and paying for them, and then you're going to have a really sweet thing in your portfolio. But you start buying a bunch of stuff with a bunch of payments and the renters don't pay, all of a sudden you're back where I was 20 years ago and you're bankrupt. You should have a lot of cash before using real estate as an investment. Real estate eats cash, no question about it. Buy slowly. Always buy investment properties with cash. Nothing down real estate is a one-way ticket to bankruptcy court. These midnight cable TV things are a good way for you to mess up your life. Stay out of that. Anything that sounds too good to be true is. Listen, I've owned more real estate than most of those guys doing those tape sets. I believe in real estate, but I believe in doing it the way my grandfather did. You pay for it or you don't buy it, and then it doesn't break you. Never pay retail. When you're buying real estate, all good real estate investors will tell you that that all your money is made in real estate at the buy. So circle like a friendly vulture and get you a serious bargain when you buy something. You don't want to pay full price ever when you're an investor. You want to get a deal. Just wait, patience, get you a deal. Use cash, get you a deal. Use the negotiating stuff we talked about in the that's not good enough lesson, the bargain hunting lesson. Use that stuff when you're buying real estate. Get a bargain on it. Win with your real estate purchases. Your money's made at the buy. Now, fixed annuities, let's look at annuities for a second. Annuities are a savings account with the insurance company. That's all an annuity is. You think a savings account with a bank is a certificate of deposit. A savings account with an insurance company is an annuity. That's all an annuity is. It's nothing fancy, nothing sophisticated. There are two main types of annuities. Number one, fixed annuities. These are crummy. They give a low rate of return. It's basically a savings account with an insurance company. They're going to pay around 5%. They aren't really fixed, actually, but that's what they call them. And they're bad long-term investments because they don't pay enough. The only annuities I like are variable annuities. Now, variable annuities are mutual funds inside of an annuity. So let's pretend that this cookie jar represents an investment. And that for purposes of this discussion, this investment might be mutual funds. This cookie jar could be mutual funds. All an annuity is a coat that comes around the investment to keep it warm, right? And if it keeps it warm, it keeps taxes off of it, all right? And you pay for the coat. So you pay an annuity fee and you pay a mutual fund fee, both. But we're keeping it warm from taxes by putting it in an annuity. That is a good part of the variable annuity. So it's a way to buy mutual funds if you've maxed out all your retirement and your house is paid for and everything else. It's a way to buy mutual funds and let them grow without paying taxes on them as they grow. And you pay an extra fee for that. Some of these have some really cool features. These variable annuities, they will guarantee your principal. If it goes down in value, the mutual funds do, they will guarantee what you put $100,000 in there, they'll guarantee it. That's kind of nice, especially when folks get a little bit older and they're wanting to do some investing. And some of them are even giving you a floor. They're saying, well, we'll pay you at least 8%, knowing that the stock market has averaged 12. That's a pretty safe bet for them. But they give you this floor on interest rates and a guarantee on your principal. Nice little features for that coat, and it's kept warm for mutual funds. Now, I don't use variable annuities a lot because I want to be able to get at my money at my age a little bit. But if you want to use them as part of your investing after you've done all your other stuff, they have a place. But that's after you've maxed out everything else. Do not use a variable annuity inside of a thing that's already tax protected. How many of you are teachers or you're in the pastoral world, or maybe you work for a hospital and you have a 403B available? Anybody? 403B. Now, 403B, a lot of times they'll offer you a variable annuity inside your 403B. Well, the 403B is already protected from taxes. But yet, when we put in a variable annuity, we put another coat around it like it was still cold. It's redundant. You're paying too many fees for no reasons. Inside your 403B, just buy mutual funds. Don't buy something because it's already warm. It's already been covered by the 403B. And so don't do that. That's a redundant situation. Now, bad ideas in the investment world. Bad ideas. The first one is gold. There's gold commercials all over the radio. They're all over cable. Buy gold, buy gold. If the economy collapses, we'll use gold. No, we don't. That's just simply not true. Historical facts are gold is not used when an economy collapses since the Roman Empire. Find me one. You know anything about it? Did you ever take Western Civ? I mean, look at them. There's no failed economy where gold became the standard. Where, you know, and let me give you a microcosm, a little micro failed economy, all right? You remember when Katrina hit New Orleans? There was nothing left. Just wiped it out, right? Anybody remember that? Say yes.
Yes.
That, in a sense, that's a failed economy right then, isn't it? Okay? People weren't running around down there with little bags of gold. But I tell you what, a bottle of water or a can of gasoline would get you about anything you wanted for a month or two there, wouldn't it? Goods and services sold and bartered are what happens when an economy collapses. People don't go, here, I'll give you my ring. They don't want your ring. They want a bottle of water. That's what happens. So that's a bogus thing. And besides that, over a 50-year track record, gold has averaged 4.1%. Hadn't even kept up with inflation. So the only gold I've got is I got some pretty cool cufflinks and a decent gold watch. That's the only gold I got. I don't own a single piece of gold, nor would I ever recommend you buy gold. Number two, commodities and futures. Buying and selling stuff like pork bellies or wheat futures or oil futures. Any of you see the movie Trading Places with Eddie Murphy? That's what they were doing. They were running a scam in the middle of the commodities thing. Commodities is a great way to lose a bunch of money because really what you're betting against is the weather. This is dumb. Have you ever noticed that the only two people who can keep their jobs are economists and weather forecasters and to be wrong all the time? The rest of us, if we're wrong all the time, we lose our job, but they can keep theirs. Who knows what it's going to do? You don't know. I bought a gold future one time. I put two dumb things together, gold and I bought futures. This friend of mine was playing golf with this guy, and he'd been picking gold prices in the commodities market, and 11 out of 11 times he had hit. Pretty impressive. I'm 25 years old. I know everything, and I've got $5,000. So I put 5,000 bucks in a 92-day future. That means in 92 days, if gold prices hit a certain level, my $5,000 would be worth $50,000 as a tenfold kick. Pretty sweet. But if it doesn't hit that level, and if this guy goes 12 out of 12, I figure he's got a dozen in him, right? He's done 11 in a row, but he's probably got a dozen in him. I'm going to try this. So I put 5,000 bucks in. And I'm thinking it's going to turn, if he hits. If it doesn't hit that mark, though, you get zero. So it's zero or 50 grand. In 92 days, I learned more about gold than I have in my entire life. I watched every day what gold was doing. I was freaking out about gold, and we lost every dollar of that. It didn't hit. He missed it. And that's what you usually do, playing around with stuff like that. Don't pay stupid tax. Stupid tax is when you lose money doing stupid things with money. Don't do stupid things with money and lose your money. I've paid lots of stupid tax. Learn from somebody else who's learned the hard way. Don't do it. Day trading. Day trading is stupid. CNN reports that 88% of the day traders lose money, and 70% lose nearly all of it. Not long ago, I had a lady from Louisville, Kentucky call me whose husband had lost $625,000 day trading. The last $150,000 of that $625,000 he lost, he had put on credit cards. You know why she called me? She wanted to know how she was going to make it as a single mom, because she had left him the day before. He completely ruined his life. Chasing a rainbow. It's not there. But he bought one of these systems, one of these get-rich-quick things, decided it was going to be easy, and he didn't have to do it the slow way, and he got his tail kicked in. Viaticals. Viaticals are just ridiculous. This is when you buy the beneficiary position on a life insurance policy of someone who's dying. They've got cancer. You figure they're going to make it 4 months. You're going to get $100,000 when they die, and you buy that for $60,000. But what'll happen is this guy's chemo kicks in, and he lives another 30 years. And that's what's happening. The viaticals are full of fraud. It's a great place to get conned and scammed. As a matter of fact, the Federal Trade Commission listed in the top 10 scams out there, and 38 states right now, the attorneys generals are doing investigations of viatical companies. If somebody comes to you with something like that, stay completely away from it. Listen, just keep it simple. If you're looking for a shortcut, you got the wrong spirit. That's not how wealth is built. It's built gradually, layer upon layer upon layer upon layer upon layer upon layer. Now, we're going to talk about things like IRAs and 401ks and 403bs and 457s and all that stuff in another lesson where we talk about how to shelter, how to put a coat around these different investments. But I want to close up with this. Not long ago, I was meeting with a guy having lunch. Now, I told you, I like to hang out with somebody who's done something I haven't done to be able to learn from them. This guy's 72 years old, and he's a billionaire. A billionaire. That's 1,000 million. Okay? You're beginning to get this. This is a lot. It's a lot more than I've ever seen. So when I have lunch with him, I've got my yellow pad out. I'm taking notes. I don't want to talk here. I'm not here to teach. I'm here to learn. I'm sitting at the feet of the master. This guy's got a strong Christian faith. He's got a wonderful family. He's got a wonderful business. His life is pretty awesome looking in from the outside. I know folks have problems, and he probably has his share. But he's got $1 billion, and I want to know how you do this. I want to learn from him. You know what I'm saying? I've been blessed in the last few years to have lunch with several billionaires. I used to go have lunch with millionaires. Now I am one. I want to meet with billionaires. Okay? These guys, there's only about 300 of them in the United States right now. It's pretty amazing. So, you know, they're fairly rare breed. So I'm sitting and talking to this guy, and I said, all right, so if you were me and you were my age, you know a lot about what I do, what would you do? Great question, right? And he thought for a minute, and he said, well, there's two things that you must do if you want to win. I went, oh, good. One, I can do this outline. One, two. This one I can do. It's always simple, isn't it? He said, one, I hear you on the radio when someone's hurting, I hear you give them a free book or you put them through your course. I hear you do that all the time. If you ever stop doing that, I'm going to call you and bust you. Because he says, I've never met anybody who wins at money that doesn't give. And he said, you keep that giving spirit if you want to win. Check. I can do that one. I got that one. That's we can do that. Second thing is, there's this book I read. Now, I'm a huge reader. I believe in reading. Leaders read. Everybody that wins is a reader. So I'm a book nut. I got books everywhere. And I'm going, book. Oh, good. I'm going to write the book down. What's a book? This guy's got a book for me. I want the book. He goes, this book is so good. He said, I read it to my grandkids over and over and over again. Really? Your grandkids. I knew this stuff was simple. I tell people it's simple. Here I am. It's proven my theory. It's right. Simple. And he says, have you ever read the book, The Tortoise and the Hare? And I went, that's what you've got for me? The Tortoise and the Hare. And he said, yeah, Dave, I read The Tortoise and the Hare all the time. He said, I read it to my grandkids over and over and over again. He said, we live in a culture full of hares. The whole culture's ADD. They all need Ritalin. I mean, they're going bananas, you know? He said, there are so few tortoises. And he said, every time I read the book, the tortoise wins. Every time. I'd never get to the end of it. So if you want to build wealth as an investor, sit at the feet of a billionaire and do what he did. Layer upon layer, steady. You may be ugly. Your friends may make fun of you. You may be moving slow, but you got your eye on the goal. And you step, 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 back and forth up the mountain, back and forth up the road, until you finally reach that point. It's going to look kind of funny being a turtle riding down that hill. Isn't it? I think maybe he's got a little cape on, doesn't he? Maybe he's super turtle by then. It's kind of the way I visualize it. But that's how wealthy people think. And that's how they build wealth. So I don't care if you're over here with just baby step one with $1,000. I don't care. Back and forth. And you reach the pinnacle point where your money makes more for you than you make for you. Thanks for being here today.